Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello! And welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
We are, and it's been a busy old week in the snooker world. We were just saying before we came on air that there might have been nothing that you might call like a major event, but there's been an awful lot of smaller and very important events going on across the globe. It's been, streaming all over the place. I've had all sorts of screens going, all sorts of tabs open. It's been a really fun week, actually, on the snooker world.
It has, Phil. I think it's been summed up very well by a line you used on social media, which is that we have been enjoying a barrage of Bay's business. Now, I haven't had the most pleasurable of days, to be honest. It's been quite, I was about saying to you off air, I might say this when we record how much I'm struggling. I already am, shameless, a few seconds in. Getting my excuses in early, Phil. So this episode is riddled with mistakes. Obviously, it's just down to my tiredness. So it hasn't been the best of days, but by a mile, the most pleasurable thing has been saying a barrage of Bay's business. I mean, have a go yourself. I know it's your phrase. Say it out loud. It's extraordinarily pleasurable.
Barrage of Bay's business. Yeah, no, that's the first time I said it. I just wrote it down. So, yeah, when these weeks come up, it's streaming things from all over the place. That's exactly how it felt. And it's a good thing. It's a good barrage to be on the end of.
So if you're out there now, I know you probably already are, just say a barrage of Bay's business and just feel all the pressures melt away, all the stresses. It's just a lovely succession of bees there. You're right, Phil. It's not been the busiest of weeks, but there's been so much going on. I have to be honest, I have been consumed by the Cheltenham Festival in recent days. My mind and eyes have been a lot on the racing going on at Prestbury Park. But of course, keeping in touch as best I can with all things that are happening in snooker. And maybe we'll talk Championship League, should we, first? Because we're sort of a bit caught twixt and tween. Unlikely a midweek episode for us. I know we normally like to go in the start of the week. But the Championship League is one event that has finished. We have a definitive outcome. And Mark Selby has won it, hasn't he? He's won the latest version. Won it for the first time, actually, at the non-ranking version of the tournament. I was just thinking, if you were to make a sort of prototype of Mark Selby, you'd obviously get various bits in, the great safety play, the granite play, the never giving up. One thing you'd have to get in, I was thinking, is coming into form for the business end of the season. That is such a Selby trademark. He's doing it again, Phil.
He is, yeah. And I wrote about this morning because I was in the office, and you can't get too carried away at the Championship League. I'm aware of sort of the status of the tournament, but to win it takes some doing. You got to win a lot of games, a lot of games that are easy to lose in those short formats, and a lot of good players, especially in that winners group, superb selection of players. So to come through and looking so good doing it, I think he made think he made 21 centuries in the seven group in the three groups he played, and seven in the winners group. So just over 2 days, and some really big ones in there as well. So yeah, he was looking very, very impressive. You know, we're getting towards the Worlds, and you couldn't really get further away from the Crucible as the behind closed doors Morningside Arena, really. But it's got to be very encouraging for Selby fans. He's looking impressive and he's sounding good. You know, he's never going to be, you know, some players will make it clear how confident they sound and how make it clear how well they think they're playing. He's never going to be boasting about that on that front. But, you know, when he says, oh, I've been playing some good stuff, you know, that's enough to know that he thinks his game's in good shape. So, yeah, like you say, it's very Selby to do it. He did it last year, actually. He's going to be quite a few people's tips for the Crucible, I should think. If he can just put in a few good performances now in China in the Tour Championship, he could really build some momentum.
Yeah, him saying I'm playing some good stuff means I'll be at the one table setup, doesn't it? Very good stuff means I'll be in the final, that kind of thing. But yeah, no, congratulations to Mark. It's a fine effort. And we should say, not to go through extensively, I think, hopefully appropriately on what happened, John Higgins topped the table, actually, with 5 wins from 6 matches, ahead of Mark Selby, Stuart Bingham and Joe O'Connor. That was the final four. In the semi-finals, Joe O'Connor beat John Higgins 3-0. Top performance from Joe there, breaks of 52-139, then 92 from him. Mark Selby beat Stuart Bingham 3-0, pretty comfortable one there, break of 17 frame 3 from Selby. And then in the final, it was Mark Selby 3, Joe O'Connor 1. O'Connor won the opening frame, actually, of that short contest, but Selby took the next three. As you mentioned, some of his big breaks, he had one in the final, a break of 137. So, yeah, he certainly got his scoring boots on. Well for Joe O'Connor as well, of course, who's you know, really showing some of that form that I know you mentioned. He had that, of course, maximum recently. And you were saying, I think, what most of us thought, he might have believed he'd come on a bit further than he has this season, maybe showing signs of it now. But yeah, for Selby fans and some of those other big hitters as well that are sort of coming into form, it's all looking good. And it's not just been the Championship League. I think actually Mark's kind of shown signs generally at tournaments, I think, in recent weeks that he's got some of that big scoring back and looking, you know, confident. We know about some of the issues he's had off the table that is always going to have an effect. But he's such a dangerous customer every year. You know, in Sheffield, it'll be no different. And I'm looking through it. It's his only trophy of the season, isn't it? But
yes. Yeah.
But I think he's not guaranteed to be in the Tour Championship last time I looked, but he's damn as near to being that way. And he still reached sort of finals, semis. You know, so it's like all those top guys, you know, we expect so much of them. It's almost like, oh, they've not done much this season. But of course, you know, if you actually string together all the prizes he's won, the prize money, if you like, you know, he'll be in Manchester. You know, he's still had an okay season. And I always think, you know, sometimes you're best off not having an amazing season going to Sheffield. That's the kind of the weird way the sport works, I think. You know, and he's going to be one of the front runners. And as ever, no one will play when we get to that that most fascinating of 17 days at the Crucible, Phil.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just the standards people are held by, isn't it? I think he's number 11 on the 1 year list. So, you know, there's a quick bit of maths, 119 roughly players that would swap places with him on the 1 year list. And there's only 10 in front of him. So it's hardly disastrous, is it? But it's not been spectacular by his amazing standards, but it won't matter by the time he's winning matches in Sheffield. Yeah, it's fascinating thing. He's been to 5 of the last 10 finals in Sheffield. What an achievement that is, and won 4 of them. It's ridiculous, really. So yeah, going to be a threat. Obviously, he would have been anyway if he turned up with hardly winning a match all year. People wouldn't be ruling it out, but if he can pick up some form, which he looks like he is doing, like I say, it wasn't just the last couple of days. Beating Ronnie 6-0 at the Players' Championship was pretty convincing. But it hasn't been fully convincing since that, has he? Because obviously he lost his next match to Zhang, which was a great game. No shame in losing that. I thought his loss in Saudi, which we'll come to Mark Allen, was showed that he's not fully at his best. there was a bit of fragility there, I thought. But yeah, then to come back and do what he's done in the Championship League, very, very impressive. So yeah, he'll be heading to China, where he's won a lot of tournaments, feeling very confident.
He will, and well teed up. We're going to try and keep this flowing as much as we can, because we're aware there are so many tournaments going on, as say some of them are in progress. And on that note, we'll have the latest from the Women's World Championship coming up for you later. So if you are hanging on for news of that, and that's really building up to an exciting conclusion, that event in China, we'll have that for you later. But yes, next to the Saudi Invitational in Riyadh, I mean, an awful lot of attention didn't it create, Phil, over those few days. I think it was always going to. And you've already alluded there to some of the sort of play we saw. The play was very good. That's no surprise to me, or I would have thought hopefully to anyone watching. I guess you can have tournaments where the players don't catch fire, but that was never really likely when you got the best players, you know, going to a tournament with that much money on offer. There was some really, you know, good play. Talk about Selby and Allen. What a, you know, ridiculous match that was. I'd half forgotten it, actually, but that double to win it from Allen. Absolutely audacious stuff. Not to mention the pink, which was absolutely perilous. He was an awful snooker. Got that in, and the black as well. That was, don't know how Selby lost that. But there was all kinds of sort of matches like that, you know, fascinating to watch on the table. And of course, Ronnie O'Sullivan, you know, who is redoubtable generally, but he's redoubtable in those type of tournaments. I was listening to Stephen Hendry in recent days talking about it, and he was saying, you know, they're just made for Ronnie. The few days, he didn't have to sort of think about, oh, I'm playing here for a week or the 17 days in the Sheffield case. It, you know, he turns up, lots of money, quick matches. You know, he pounces on those opportunities. He was obviously absolutely excellent against John Higgins. John actually didn't get a point, you know, apart from a foul ball, which is quite something else. And Ronnie ended up going all the way, beating Luca Purcell 4-1 in the final. That's five tournament wins now for Ronnie. He's won the two Triple Crowns plus three others. And I wrote in my new Sporting Life column, Phil, that I think the climax of the season is always fascinating, but this one really promises so much. And the way I sort of built it up was the player of the season race, which I know is not the biggest thing in the game, but it just shows how many players are sort of firing and done well throughout the campaign. Ronnie's a logical number one suggestion, but it's not in the bag. I was saying, if Judd Trump wins at the Crucible, it's him. And frankly, if maybe one or two others win in the Crucible, if Mark Allen wins at the Crucible, it's him. So I think there are, you know, there's still factors. And of course, the Tour Championship to throw into the equation as well. But yeah, in terms of Ronnie, and maybe a word about Luca as well, of course, you know, improved form from him. We'll see if that carries on over into the tournament to come, the World Open in China. You know, impressive from him. He's another player that's come into better form. I mean, he couldn't be in much worse form in a way than he was sort of the end of last year, start of this year. He was really out of sorts, Luca, but he's back on it. But Ronnie, typical of him, Phil, like we saw in Hong Kong, like we've seen in the Champion of Champions over the years, and those really sort of, those kind of prestige feel one table events, absolutely made for O'Sullivan.
Yeah, they are. And he's so reliable in them, isn't he? And I've said on here before, though, it's like, I completely agree with all of that, but it's not like those conditions shouldn't suit other top players. You know, one table, brilliant conditions, being really well looked after, playing for a lot of money. You know, you could be describing a tournament that Judd Trump wants to play in there, or really any player with any sort of ambition to be right at the top of the game. So as much as they are, I mean, they clearly are made for O'Sullivan because he wins so many of them, but it's not like it should be detrimental to everyone else. They should really help other players. But I mean, that's just when he shows that he's the best still, isn't he? And sort of quite comfortably. Yeah, like you said, he was amazing against Higgins and against Purcell. That game against Trump was weird because that was looked like it was setting up to be a blockbuster in the semis. And Trump said himself that he was as bad as he can remember playing for a while. And Ronnie said that as well. And Ronnie, I mean, he won 4-1, so he was comfortably better, but he wasn't good either. It was a very strange match. But yeah, in general, the games were enjoyable throughout, really. Obviously, the wildcard round, with a couple of local players. I mean, they acquitted themselves all right, but couldn't really compete with players at the very top of the game, obviously. And then the rest of the games were largely very, very good. Yeah, as you said, as you would expect. And Ronnie, you know, what a season. It's, yeah, like you say, he's he is the front runner at the minute. Near enough every tournament he's looked engaged in and turned up for, he's won. Near enough, he's got an incredible win rate. And it's very hard to not make him favourite for any tournament where you're expecting him to be fully dialed in and engaged in. So yeah, just superb stuff. And his bank balance must be looking very, very good.
I think I saw a line that there was a chance of him getting 2 million. I think it might have been Hendry again teeing that up. And I think he'll have to win them all, won't he? But or virtually yeah. win them all. But
yeah, I think he had to win the next three. So obviously an enormous ask, but yeah, that'd yeah. be incredible.
Yeah, I don't think I want to. The classic thing, I know I'm a bit of a bang in the old drum. I don't think if you want to win the Crucible, don't win in Manchester. I mean, listen, they all want to win in Manchester, but I wouldn't be liking the winner in Manchester's chances necessarily. Maybe a part of them is Ronnie or Judge because they kind of buck those trends a bit. But yeah, it's just the way those sort of, I think our superstitious minds work as sports fans. Sometimes very difficult to do two big things in a row. Well, Phil, on to the sort of more controversial matters and nature of the tournament. Again, this is my second and last plug of my Sporting Life column, Phil, and that is a promise. If I do it again, then it's a couple of quid in the charity box from me, and maybe I'll send you a double decker or something. I did write in there that I didn't think the broadcast was always the most palatable. I thought it kind of strayed away from being a sporting broadcast at times and into kind of more advertorial territory, which I didn't think was always the most dignified, really. I thought it kind of hit a bit of a lowish point on the last night in that regard, in terms of sort of, it just felt a bit more like brash salesmanship than a serious broadcast. Really, a lot of them. And maybe that I'm thinking, because we got some correspondence on this sort of related point, and I think maybe it's fair to sort of separate out some of the commentary from the presentation. It was the presentation, I think, side that was particularly sort of garish. I mean, I know a lot of people that just didn't watch it, and you know, and really good. You know, good people that we know, great snooker people, really. You know, our friend Daniel Clark that joined us on here, Gary Moss that joined us on here. I know Paul Barnsley, who's a strong acquaintance of the podcast. Our good friend John in Swansea, people like that. They just, you know, didn't want to watch it. And they're, you know, snooker writers as well and chroniclers of the game. I know the team at snooker.org were not particularly enamoured with the event. They covered it in a sort of more limited way than they would other events. They thought that was appropriate. But of course, plenty of people did watch it, and that was also no great surprise. It might be a funny thing to link it to, but it totally bizarre incident now, if you call it an incident, when Gary Lineker didn't do Match of the Day. I don't know when that was now, about a year ago or something, for various comments he was making on social media, wasn't it, basically? And actually, Match of the Day got incredible viewing figures that Saturday. And I think people did it because there was a bit of a novelty to it, how they're going to go. It was awful, really. It was about 15 or 20 minutes of just the goals with nothing else, no commentary or presentation or anything. But they tuned in. And of course, there was an awful lot of hype over this. So I'm also not surprised that, you know, people, you know, did turn their eyes towards it as well. But when good snooker people, you know, don't follow a tournament, I think that is a worry. That is a concern. Some of the things that I was seeing did kind of worry about me a bit, the excess of it all. I think a lot of it was naivety for me. I think I probably presumed that people would go in and be a bit more circumspect. I thought the whole thing would be a bit quieter. Again, that's probably hopelessly naive. And I have heard, and you'll be able to tell me more about this, certainly things like wrestling, which I know you follow, that it's actually followed a similar pattern with a lot of events in Saudi. I mean, a lot of them haven't. I haven't, you know, there are a few things like tennis. I don't remember this kind of level of sort of brash sort of salesmanship going on. I'm willing to sort of not focus on some things like the crowd. I mean, we reported the line on here that it was sold out. I'd looked very carefully on the site. There was no tickets available. And I know we did get a line from WST on that, about, you know, it being a different culture and not everyone staying for every frame. And actually the crowds did build up towards the end and were okay. And actually, tournaments everywhere are a bit like that. So I personally, you know, I'm not inclined to, you know, bash WSC over the head for that particularly. But I thought some of the, you know, this is all wonderful, this is all great, didn't really ring entirely true for me. Nothing my voice for now. Over to you. There was lots to reflect on, certainly. But I'm also glad that I'm speaking, you know, a wee bit after the event as well, because I think the dust has settled. And actually, I think I will prefer the ranking event anyway quite a lot more. I think had that been first, I don't think I'd have found it quite so unpalatable. I think it'll feel a lot more snooker. It'll feel a lot more snooker, the ranking event. That obviously won't be that gimmick we saw. It'll be more players. I suspect the debate will be better around it than it was this time. So anyway, all a bit of a head rush, I found the whole thing, and not really in a great way. What was your verdict?
Yeah, I mean, it was, however this came about, there was a huge amount of bigging it up and saying how great it was. And there was a couple of sessions where the broadcast started and there was sort of 30, 40 minutes before the snooker started. And there were some highlights shown, but, you know, it was an awful lot of just saying how wonderful it was to be there. And, you know, if everyone is having a wonderful time, I don't expect them to not say that, but it did feel very forced and pushed. And you know, these promoters get what they pay for, don't they? You know, that's we sort of bemoan that we don't get to have much sort of insight around sort of the places where tournaments go to, what it's like there, other places. Some tournaments that cover sort of around Europe, we wouldn't even know where we are. And it's this one has paid the money to get more sort of time and space and coverage to do that. So they have got that, you know, as you say, it's an advertorial for the country. It's all linked with the regime, which is pretty deplorable. You know, there's literally just sort of playing in front of adverts for Visit Saudi Arabia. So, you know, that it was very sort of, if you're sort of wondering, sports washing is quite a sort of new term in general, and it's quite hard to get your head around in a lot of ways. But if you sort of wanted to look at what it was, just watch that tournament. That was really sort of summed it up. But it was, I think it's important to sort of separate that from talking about the culture. You know, the players were sort of talking about how it's nice to, they enjoyed sort of meeting people, meeting the fans, being in the relaxed culture there. You know, that is different from sort of the laws of the government of the land in some ways. And I don't want to sort of come down on normal people there who are just wanting to go and watch snooker and meet, and very, and a lot of them seem very excited to meet the players. And that was great. And the players are engaging. So, yeah, no one's criticising the fans. I mean, the crowds were sort of embarrassingly bad at the start, really. I mean, they did their opening ceremony to no one. That first session, I know that was sort of added on towards the end, so you could sort of ignore that in a way. But then I think it was the semi-final. I remember that Brussel and Allen coming out for the semi on that final day to almost no one. That's a bad look. Any tournament when there's no one there, especially one that's made a big deal of like this. But on the flip side, when they were good, they were very good. And the atmosphere in the final was superb. And a couple of the other games as well. But especially sort of chanting Ronnie at the end and stuff. It was really good. So, yeah, of course, it's mixed. Lots of things going on. You know, I've been watching... The boxing was there again last weekend, wasn't it? Joshua knocking out Francis Ngannou. And this is a separate thought, really, but it was a slight worry that I had in terms of snooker, having watched like Ronnie go over there and be the star of the show again. Because boxing has benefited from the Saudi cash in the fact that it's been pumped full of it. But we've had Fury fight Ngannou and Joshua fight Ngannou, you know, two of the best heavyweights in the world fighting the UFC fighter in what is effectively just a waste of time. It's just loads of money for those guys. It's not helpful for the mixed martial arts world because their best heavyweight is left. And it's not helpful for heavyweight boxing because the best heavyweights are just fighting this guy who shouldn't be there, but they're making loads of money. And I don't think it's helpful for the sport. Now, if they're putting money into good tournaments and the ranking tournaments come, that's one thing. You know, if they see, if the guys who organise it see that Ronnie's the star, everyone loves Ronnie, didn't even turn up for some of the matches, and they just want to pay him, shed loads of cash to play exhibitions against other top players, so much cash that he doesn't need to turn up at events. Yeah, that would be a concern. And yeah, I've got no evidence to suggest that's going to happen, but it has, money can sort of get in the way of what we enjoy about sports as sports. And that could be a problem. Just something I thought about through watching the boxing, really. But yeah, no, as I say, mixed things, obviously, plenty to talk about. I'm sure we could talk about till the cows come home.
Yeah, no, some really, really valuable views there from you. Yeah, on the sports washing thing, it is a new term, but it's a brilliant term. And the reason we in the media keeps using it, because it's one of our greatest inventions. It's a brilliant term. It couldn't illustrate better what is happening in front of our eyes. It is the perfect phrase, and often media phrases and terms are, you can smell them a mile off, they don't work. This one does. Yeah, I've always agreed with the fans' point. I asked from the very start, was there any reason to get behind this event or to back it apart from money? I was given dreadful answers generally, but this was a good one that I think fans in that region, I know people came from nearby countries, different parts of Saudi, and I saw two or three people on television talk about, you know, they've loved the game for decades, you know, 30 years, 40 years. They've loved the class of 92 since they started playing. They can't believe they're seeing these guys in their backyard. And that's brilliant. I remember seeing similar things at the Qatar World Cup. A lot of people from Saudi, actually, in Qatar. But people from Qatar as well, people from that region, couldn't believe they're seeing these marvellous superstars, whatever the sport is in that region. That's always been the best other point, apart from money, for me. It wasn't so much seeing the place. I'm happy to see places. I'm an absolute travel lover, and I've been going to that region all my life and also love it. I was chatting to someone the other day about Oman, and I remember going to Muscat many years ago, and what a marvellous place that is. And, you know, in some ways, I can't think of a part of the world where I feel more comfortable in on some levels. It's very relaxing. It's very peaceful. Without going into the ins and outs of my own, you know, personal history with alcohol, I find it very interesting to go there now. I don't drink in my life. And you know, I found elements of the Qatar World Cup experience, and I'm sure I'd find the same in Saudi Arabia, very sort of peaceful, really, without having to worry about the excess of alcohol. And that reminds me of a conversation I had with a couple of Saudi people, guys in, you know, in Qatar, which I think is important to say that, you know, there are nuances here. And this is what, when you say about no country being perfect, they were kind of saying that they find some of the things we do ridiculous to do with drinking. And for example, some of the excesses of our culture and the fact that you don't feel safe after dark in some of our towns and cities. And they think that's absolutely ridiculous. But let's be clear here. This all pales into comparison with that list that I detailed from Amnesty International on here a couple of months ago, which remains the crux of this. That is the heart of this debate. The plain fact that this country, Saudi Arabia, we know to be one of the worst human rights offenders in the world. And that remains something that we all have to address in sport. And not just in sport. I was listening to Richard Osman on his podcast the other day, and I didn't realise how much they were moving into the entertainment world, you know, probably should have realised that. I mean, I had heard that, you know, they were making the odd film there, but I didn't realise how much they were sort of breaking into Hollywood mainstream money in that business. So it's not just sport. It's all parts of life, I guess. But it's those moral questions that I think, you know, remain at the heart of this. And I think, you know, it's right that snooker is asked the question. I don't think it has been asked enough questions, actually. I mean, I would say, but we had a big interview with Luca Purcell, didn't we, here last week. And I'm pretty sure we were all based in the UK for it, weren't we? So I'm not sure there was a main frontline snooker journalist, like regularly on the circuit, that was in Saudi. I could be wrong by that. And I think that's a factor. I mean, again, there's various nuances here. The way the industry is and the way our work is, there's probably not enough justification for any of us to be in Saudi. This is a wider thing, actually. But I did think there was the lack of players being asked questions did come to fruition. That's why I thought that. Is it Stephen Watson, a very good BBC journalist that spoke to Mark Hannan? I think that's his name. He you know, I was impressed to see him ask Mark Hannan the right questions. Let me just tell you the WST response, actually, on the crowds business. It was only fair to give them this. I said I would read it out. The tickets are definitely sold out. It's a different culture compared to the UK, as fans might only watch a frame or two at a time. We are in the middle of an amazing entertainment district called Boulevard City in the heart of Riyadh, where people might spend a few hours visiting a lot of different attractions. It's a great arena, and the fans we have spoken to are loving the event. It's a very diverse crowd. Some have travelled across the Middle East to attend. Players have been interacting with them in fan zones and posing for selfies. Yeah, so maybe let's say that's enough for us here, Phil, on this one now. I didn't mind seeing the place. What I didn't like was being told how wonderful everything was and how it was just the brilliant place to be. Everything about it was wonderful. It didn't ring true. I don't think it would have fooled the viewers. It didn't fool the viewers, frankly, because I've seen enough response to it. We've got enough response to it. And so we perhaps move on to our correspondence now.
Yeah.
When we remind you that you are listening here to the Talking Snooker podcast with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Phil, we said that we're going to park the Saudi Arabia matter until August when we return in the snooker world to having an event there, the ranking tournament early next season, which I think we're probably quite happy about. But we'll now go through the correspondence, which we did ask for. Thank you for it. And first, Brian Campbell. Dear Nick and Phil, I tuned in for parts of the World Masters in Saudi Arabia, partly because I enjoy watching top-level snooker, but also because for this tournament in particular, I was curious to see how events would unfold. For me, the positives were on the table, and I enjoyed the final. When Ronnie is flowing, he is a joy to watch. And perhaps playing in Saudi Arabia will help to open the game up in the Middle East, particularly in the United Arab Emirates. The biggest negative for me was WST, Eurosport, and the players insulting our intelligence regarding the lack of spectators and how they behaved, particularly on day one. I was disappointed with Eurosport's attitude of isn't everything wonderful, when clearly it wasn't, with a virtually empty arena for the first session and a very low attendance for the second session. Oh, to have a broadcaster with gravitas like Hayter Lerm in there to navigate this issue instead of ignoring it. Eddie Hearn saying that the culture there is only to watch a frame or two was really veering to Spinal Tap selective audience or not a Rock City territory. Things got even more ridiculous when Jack Lazowski said that someone walking in your eye line could actually ease some tension. I'm sure he'll be delighted if that happens in the next tournament when he is on an important shot. Next up was Judd Trump praising the atmosphere, all Emperor's New Clothes stuff. Finally, when the announcement regarding the increase in money on offer for the 167 was made, I felt sad. That's when it really sunk in for me that the end game will be to take the world championship there in 2028. Money is no object for the Saudis. Eddie Hearn is a successful businessman who will follow the cash, as I suspect he doesn't share the respect for snooker's history that many of us have. And given their words and actions, we now know the players will do and say anything for money. I don't think I'll ever forget all the players walking out at the start of the opening session, grinning from ear to ear as if they were getting rapturous applause and the best welcome ever, when in fact the opposite was true. I'd have accepted a little bit of honesty along the lines of it not being ideal. And as it's a new territory, things will take a while to bed in. That would have been understandable. Instead, we got insulting nonsense from WST players and Eurosport. I'd like to end on a positive note by thanking you both for a fantastic podcast. You never shirk from addressing tricky subjects, and it's always done in a calm, intelligent, thoughtful way. Keep up the great work. Kind regards, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. This is Will. Hi, guys. Thanks for the podcast. You asked for listener opinions regarding the event in Saudi Arabia. My own view is clear. If I was top player, I wouldn't play there due to their abysmal human rights record. I could proceed to write a long email detailing why I think it is morally wrong to play in Saudi Arabia in the light of sports washing. The murder of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi embassy in Istanbul in 2018, or the fact that homosexuality is illegal there and subject to the death penalty. However, it appears that these kind of concerns don't really seem to matter to, or at least would rather be swept under the carpet by the likes of Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, Jordan Henderson, Rafael Nadal, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, innumerate golfers, Judd and Ronnie, among so many others, including the dozens of promoters and agents who facilitate these events. I'd like to reference John McEnroe discussing an interview with Graham Benzinger when he refused to accept an offer of $1 million to play an exhibition match in apartheid South Africa in 1980. That is an example of a sports person with real integrity. At least Tyson Fury is being truthful when he admitted in an interview that he was boxing in Saudi for the money. This kind of admission is preferable to what I consider the moronic attitude of Mark Allen, who would rather not get involved in politics at all and would just be allowed to play for a fat paycheck without being asked any difficult questions by journalists. If only life was that simple. It's an odd comment for Allen to make, considering he's been so outspoken in the past about the tour and China in particular. My overall point is, it's obviously up to individuals to decide whether they want to go and play their chosen sport in Saudi Arabia. If they agree to do so, they can't then expect not to be asked about the morality of it or their role in sports washing. Thanks, Will.
Dean Barrow says, hi, first time I've emailed but been listening for a while. The Saudi tournament was exactly how I expected. The snooker was of a really high quality, but the complete hyperbole from the players around how great everything was, the atmosphere, the setup, etc., was not great, and as if they were being asked, told, to big everything up. As for the interviews after the final, they were just an advert for the Saudi Tourist Board. Nothing at all about the match, how they played, just used as a propaganda exercise to praise the Saudi kingdom. I understand the need to globalise snooker and bring in money, and was willing to give the tournament a chance. However, after watching this, it would be doubtful I'll be willing to watch future tournaments in Saudi Arabia if this is how it's going to be. I don't think any players come out with any credit with their comments generally during the tournament. And at times, they seem very dismissive of the fans in the UK who have paid their hard-earned money to attend tournaments in the UK to support the game and its players. Keep up the good work and honest opinion of the delicate matters. Thanks, Dean.
Here's Greg in Sutton. Hi, Nick and Phil. Hope this email finds you well. It does. I wanted to drop you a quick note about the recent buzz around the snooker tournament in Saudi Arabia that's been making waves. While I'm all for shining light on human rights issues, it got me thinking, why does China seem to skate under the radar when hosting snooker events, given their own appalling human rights record? It's a bit puzzling that their snooker tournaments don't get the same scrutiny. Not trying to downplay anything, just hoping we can keep the conversation balanced. Let's make sure all countries get their fair share of attention, even our own, no matter their snooker venue or geopolitical status. Thanks for taking the time to read this. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the podcast. Cheers, Greg.
Michael Waring says, hello, guys. I think you've done pretty good on this thing up to now, and I'm sure you'll do more of the same. I am adamant that the golden ball thing is bad for the game, my reasoning being that gimmicks, not just the golden ball, are chipping away at the fabric of the sport. It happened with English billiards in that they got bored with it and invented snooker. The shootout has gone from a bit of fun to a ranking event. Will we see more of it? We see amateur snooker, amateur shootout tournaments all the time now, and even that has developed into the 900. Unless there is a clear separation and distinction between exhibition-style events and the main tour, I fear that snooker will decline into the novelty events rather than progress as a proper sport. Phil knows only too well how wrestling has changed from a professional sport into a purely theatrical event. Snooker is entertaining as a sport, providing its own drama in a unique way. Long may it continue in that fashion without gimmicks. Kind regards, Michael.
And Ben here, dear Nick and Phil, thank you both for the wonderful podcast. I follow everything snooker related, but I enjoy your podcast also for the friendly conversation between you both. There is something to be said for gentle, engaging entertainment. I enjoy the length of your episodes, which, like slow TV, stops you from taking something for granted. I find that relaxing, and it makes me cherish the sport even more. That's a lovely first paragraph there. Thank you for also your coverage of the Saudi Invitational event. I've listened attentively to the views expressed across the Snooker podcast, and I appreciate you giving listeners the opportunity to share their own feelings. You've eloquently explained the reasons why staging snooker events in Saudi Arabia is of potential concern. With these in mind, I suggest two issues around sports washing that I see arising from the first Saudi Invitational: numbness and momentum. Numbness to the issues, and with it, a momentum to host more events. This leads to ever less emphasis on the concerns around holding these events, which appear designed to obscure and obfuscate ethical considerations. I fear a growing reductionism of the concerns around holding snooker competitions, a suggestion that capitalism is the only driver, and that capitalism will, and more worryingly, should get all it wants. Views to the contrary are dismissed as naive and old-fashioned, yet there is no invisible hand. Decisions are made by people, and people with moral agency. If there is a point where money is not a good enough reason to do something, then where is it? When Steve Davis retired, there was a very emotional BBC piece where, through tears, he explained that snooker wasn't his game. He didn't own it. That's right, it's everyone's game. Players, fans, pundits. When you look at the bottom line too much, you can remove the humanity. It's too often presented as money equals opportunity. There is opportunity too in taking an ethical line, standing up for people, and a set of values. Many thanks once again for all you do, and please edit, cut, or ignore this as makes best sense. Warmest wishes, Ben. Well, you got it all in, Ben.
Ross Harmer, hi guys. Do you think this event could happen to be bigger next year? More players, maybe the complete top 16. Keep up the great podcast. It's very, very insightful. Ross.
And John here. Snooker has to be inclusive family for everyone to participate and be themselves. I don't see how playing in Saudi aligns with that for women or people who identify as LGBT+. Imagine being from that community and seeing the game you love do all it can to appease and praise a regime who would clearly abuse and castigate you just for being you. And if we're talking hypocrisy, I'd hate to think that there are players yet to come out actually playing in these events. Either their financial want is greater than being themselves, or they just don't know the atrocities that are being carried out. We've never had a player come out, nor should they have to, yet I really think that the possibility of anyone doing so has been put back many years due to these tournaments.
Ben says, dear Nick and Phil, thank you both for this wonderful podcast. I follow everything snooker related, but I enjoy your podcast also for the friendly conversation between you both. There is something to be said for gentle, engaging entertainment. I enjoy the length of your episodes, which, like slow TV, stops you from taking something for granted. I find that relaxing.
I think we've done this one already. I think I've done this one.
Oh, my apologies. Have you? Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No problem. Just didn't want to read the whole one out again. I think you go to Morgan.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'll go to Morgan. And that particular email says, snooker appears to be approaching Saudi Arabia in 2024 in the same way that Matchroom did China in the 80s, holding exhibitions in the new market. Looks like it's been really successful, given all the criticism of this exhibition run by private enterprise in Saudi and all the silence when the actual tour goes to China. Would you agree that China sports-washed the snooker community before that word was fashionable? I don't have a horse in the race. I watch snooker on TV if it's outside a 50-mile radius of my house, and I do not care where they play. Thanks, Morgan. Well, thank you for all those, and apologies to you for the listeners for that. That's obviously my ham-fistedness late on there. I may well have missed one, because I'm pretty sure we did have 10, but not to worry. I guess we should address Ross. Don't know about whether it could be more. Could easily be. I mean, it ended up being 10 in the end, didn't it, really? So I guess it could be more players for that. Yeah, I mean, I thought the general point about the broadcast was right. I thought I don't go as far as insulting intelligence, but it didn't ring true. And the silly thing is, had they dialed it down a bit more, it would have been far more effective. They didn't have to dial it down loads, just a bit more, a little bit more realistic, and would have been a lot better for me. And yeah, I don't think I've got any more to add to that. I say we are leaving it now until August. We know that it's been a particularly, tricky issue to sort of think about in recent months. It's certainly, you know, dominated since the news came through that we'd have a tournament there. I think the ranking event in August will be more palatable anyway. That's my feeling about it. There'll be more players there. It'll be a more regular event. We'll be more used to it then. I think the debate will probably be better then. And I hope that's not naive for me. That's my hope, Phil.
Oh, yeah. Well, I agree. Yeah, a couple of things. I think the players, I don't actually think they've been sort of coached pre-camera and said, go on there and say all these things. But they are just like tremendously well looked after there, paid an enormous amount. You know, it reminds me a bit of Jordan Henderson when I think this is the World Cup actually in Qatar before he went to Saudi, and he was asked about sort of the migrant workers there. And he was like, oh, well, everywhere I go, it looks great. He was like, well, yeah, it will, Jordan. You play for England. You know, they don't see anything that they have any negative comments to make about. So that's why you get such glowing reviews, because they're shown brilliant things. It's not the reality for other people. So, yeah, that's what I mean. I don't think they're sort of given a script to read, but it's just that how it's presented to players. The China point is, you know, that we haven't ignored that, I think, on here. Obviously, that is also a huge problems in China. You know, it's different, though, isn't it? You know, it's been going on. Snooker's been going there for an awful long time. If we did 20, 30 minutes on human rights in China every time someone was playing China, we would quickly be a human rights podcast and not a snooker podcast. And no one wants that. But also, it's not the same, you know, sports washing, I know, is a newer term, but I think China does things to make itself look better on the global stage, of course. But I don't think it's the same sort of situation as in Saudi now. And I think also the sort of, well, what about China, is a line that people who want to avoid the sort of human rights debate just say to avoid it. But, just saying what about China does not mean Saudi Arabia's fine. So I just don't really agree with it. But yeah, it's perfectly fine thing to ask, though. And I think that's it. I think it's a frustrating debate in general, and because it hasn't a lot of the time been a debate. I think there's the people who want to talk about the human rights stuff, and the people who don't, and the people who don't are just either ignoring it or saying it's not relevant to sport, whereas the people who do want to talk about it are still talking about it. So it's just one of those arguments where people aren't even arguing on the same grounds, and it gets a bit frustrating. So, yeah, I agree. We can park it for a while, see how it's going in August.
I agree with your point about... it's again a sort of relatively modern phrase. I say whataboutism, whataboutry. And I think that's the problem with, people seem to be spending more attention worrying about who's being hypocritical about this, and why you're not talking about this and that, rather than focusing on the issues. And I hope that's probably something that's a bit different next time. I mean, listen, with the greatest of respect for people that say, I don't care where they play, I just can't accept that. I think you have to care where people are playing sport. Anyone with a conscience, you have to care about that sort of thing. Just saying I watch it because it's snooker, I don't want to be veering into rude, but that would almost go towards a closed-minded way of approaching life, and I don't think that's the way people should go. That's what I would say.
One thing I was thinking is if there was a promoter in Britain who wanted to get involved in snooker, some British billionaire who wanted to pump a load of money into the sport and put on new events, but he was like wildly right wing and thought homosexuality should be made illegal and women should be second class citizens and there should be no freedom of speech or freedom of the press. Would people be comfortable with that person promoting snooker in Britain? Now, I would like to think, and I'm pretty sure, that almost no one would. I don't think people would be saying, oh, well, keep out politics out of sport, let him in. And I assume it would be him. But, you know, what's the difference? But anyway, we're moving on.
We are indeed, Phil. And we are now going to talk about the Women's World Championship, which is in progress in Dongzhuang, China. And I mentioned last time we were on air about the arena, which I hadn't seen too much. I've seen the odd photo. It looked great. It looks terrific, doesn't it? Inside and out. What an absolute palace of a place. Really befitting the increased status of this tournament, which seems to be getting bigger and bigger every year. We can watch it. People are doing so. They're really enjoying it. And we are actually up to the quarterfinal stage, actually. And we're looking forward to those on Friday. So we should say there's been obviously loads of action. We had the group stages. We were saying off air, top standard, plenty of century breaks going in. Rhiann Evans, Mick Nutrat, Baiyu Liu making centuries. And some quite one-sided matches at the last 16 stage, but a few that were sort of closer. And most of the sort of the biggest hitters are getting towards the latter stages, as you would expect. But before we get to that, actually, let me just say, Baiyu Liu's already won the under-21 title, so congratulations to her for that. And also, let's say congratulations to Tessa Davidson, who's won the world senior title. Those events have already finished. And let's maybe just bring you the last 16 results and then let you have a say, Phil. Rhiann Evans, as is her wont, had a thumping win, beat by Serapapawn 4-0 at that stage. Breaks of 73 and 66 in that win for Rhiann. Mick Nutrat beat Rebecca Kenner 4-0. On Yi, so off Deng Xingjun 4-0. It was Katrina Wan for Shuang Yi Ting 2. Anupana Ramachandran for Narantuya Bayasaikan 0. It was Baiyu Liu for Fong Mei Mei 0. Century Breaker 104 in that win for Baiyu Liu. Han Fang beat Milnatani 4-2. And Mary Talbot beat Tessa Davidson 4-0. So it leaves us with a quarterfinal lineup, Phil, of Baiyu Liu against Katrina Wan, Rhiann Evans against Mary Talbot, On Yi against Anupana Ramachandran, and Mink Nutrat against Han Fang. I keep saying that it's on the WWS Facebook page, which it is. And every time someone always reminds me, that's the way I've been looking at it. It's also apparently on the WPBSA YouTube page. So it's on both. There are ways to watch it. And that's great, Phil. Because people have said in the past, oh, you can't see any of it. I think we've been able to see the final, haven't we, in recent times. You can now see a lot more. And that is a big thumbs up from all of us.
Yeah, definitely. The coverage has been great from that and Q2 Player, which we'll get to. I've been down in London in the office this week. So my second screen has been about four different tabs from China and from Sarajevo. And been some really good stuff, as you say. And congratulations on getting through that last 16 there. Some tricky pronunciations. I think you were glad to be back on safe ground with Mary Talbot and Tessa Davidson. By but yeah, no, some great stuff. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the groups. That set felt a bit frantic. And then into the knockout stages. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, a couple there, Mink against Kenner and Rhiann against Bypat. Some bit heavy hitters in the last 16. And then, yeah, we've got the quarterfinals. People will have heard this by the time that's been played, probably. But if the favourites come through, then we've got a blockbuster semi-final lineup of Bai against Rhiann, On Yi against Mink. So, yeah, good stuff to come. And as you say, some great breaks, a lot of which are from Bai, who looks really, really good. And if she doesn't win it this year, she's going to win it a lot of times to come, I should think.
Very much so. Of course, she's already won the British Open, hasn't she, and reached another final, I think, and semi-final. She's only 20. So, yeah, huge, huge prospect. And, yeah, the semis on Saturday could be absolute crackers. But early rise for us in the UK. But I'm determined to say, as well, we get to the World Open, that it's not early rise for everybody. We have listeners in Asia, we have listeners in Australia, we have listeners in America. Some people in America will be able to follow it in the evening. So, you know, it's all different times. But for us in the UK, there is a lot of early morning watching to come. But yeah, should be fabulous entertainment throughout the weekend. So congratulations to everyone putting that tournament on. It really is looking the part. And We were enjoying all the photos, the videos coming from there. Really good venue. Women's World Championship continues. If you'd like to have your say on the event before it ends, perhaps you're following it, you're enjoying seeing the progress of particular players, let us know, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com or tweet us at talkingsnooker. And we'll have the outcome, won't we, Phil, when we're next on air on this podcast. Now, I'm going to pass to you now, because you've certainly had your eyes across the Q Tour global playoffs more than I have. And lots of action. And you made a Weatherspoons gag, didn't you? Which I think we all appreciated.
Yeah, it was the carpet in Sarajevo is an eye catching one. Some wild patterns worth a look if you've not seen it. I don't think I'd have it in my house, but I enjoy it nonetheless. But there's been some great stuff in there as well. Some really good matches. I've seen bits of them. I watched a fair amount of Holworth. Stephen Holworth beat Barry Pinchas 5-2. And there's obviously it's now the global playoff, so we've been treated to some really good performances from players we won't have seen a lot of before. Amir Sarkosh from Iran, who has sort of played in Q School and the old Challenge Tour a bit. He has beaten Harvey Chandler and then beat Holworth after Holworth got through to that round, and was very impressive. Made 130 odd in the final frame to win his semi final match. So, some good young stars as well. Liam Davis going well, Boyko going well. And at this time we're talking, so there's three events in the Q Tour playoff. Eight players play down to a winner with three tour cards on offer. So we've got two finals set on Friday. First one, Liam Davis against Dwayne Jones in an all-Welsh affair. The second one, Julian Boyko against Amir Sarkosh, previously mentioned. And the other two semi-finals are proving to be long affairs. So you'll know before this has come out. But semi-final one is Germany's Umut Dikmay against Mohamed Shabab and Chang Yu-Q against Antoni Kowalski. So two of them will be contesting the third final on Friday. So we'll have three tour card holders on Friday. Maybe some new ones, maybe some returning ones. We'll see. But it's been good. It's been, as I said about the women's stuff, it's been really nice to watch it. Some really good, high quality stuff. Lots of big breaks going in, and some tough losses. It's hard to watch these guys chasing their dreams. People like Florian Nussler, who we've seen in so many amateur events, getting so close to getting his card, still waiting for it. Really good player. He will get there at some point, but just got to keep plugging away.
Who was it that was on here that was talking about Florian? Was it Heathcote? Someone was saying that, I think it was Florian Nussler that was particularly bereft at Q School not so long ago. And it might have been Louis saying, keep it going. Yeah, no, it's really, really hard to see. It's amazing that we can watch this stuff as well, you know. For those of us that, remember growing up, a long, long time ago, and look at those old schedules, it reminds us of the so-called glory days when we couldn't always see finals of big tournaments. I know it's going back decades, but, we couldn't always see finals of main tour tournaments live. To think that the technology allows us to watch all these events is pretty amazing stuff. And, there's a reason why every snooker podcast ever invented comes out on Mondays, Phil. It's much better, isn't it? Midweek is a right old hodgepodge, isn't it? I said to people, you can blame Cheltenham or blame me, and the more chivalrous of our fans have been blaming Cheltenham, not me, which is very kind. I think we move on to what's to come now, the World Open. And we should say again here that you are listening to the Talking Snooker podcast with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Phil, the World Open at the Yushan Sports Centre in Yushan, China. And Judd Trump's the defending champion, which is no surprise. But the interesting part of it, of course, that came in 2019. He beat Tetchaya Anu in the final. Although, does anything really count if it happened before Talking Snooker, Phil? I feel it's a bit like the Premier League started in 92. Snooker only really properly started when we came on air, but I suppose that we'll give it a brief mention, the stuff that happened before. But of course, the pandemic means we haven't had a tournament for a few years. Good to have it on again. An interesting line is this tournament, which actually, if you trace it back through the years, people don't really think of it like this, I don't think. Almost traces back to the old Grand Prix days. So it has got an interesting history, but I think we think of it in this overseas era as something a bit different, frankly. Lots of good matches to look forward to, of course. I've been having a look through them over the last couple of days. And As I say, through the night viewing for us here in the UK, very different if you're listening in other parts of the world. And the opening session to come on Monday will feature a number of big names. Mark Selby is in action. He's got Adam Duffy. Of course, we've been talking about Selby's improved form of late. Be interesting to see if he can continue that. Jose Mafai, Graham Dott, one that caught my eye. Jose has won their two previous meetings, including at the British Open this season. Luca Marcel has got the Thai player, Manasatwin Fetmalaikul. And again, you know, Luca has really shown, perhaps we'll get a word on that actually, on Luca. I know we, you know, I think you rightly did say that we're all a bit obsessed if he's back or not. You know, he's probably not fully back, but he's got a little bit of that, of that kind of walk, that demeanour back. And we spoke to him, didn't we, Phil, in a rather strange, dark Saudi Arabian room, didn't we, last week? But he was really talking a confident game. And I mean, he's not going to talk down his chances at the end of the season, but he's that kind of honest guy, Luca, that he doesn't really try and fool people. And you get the feeling he is now, for the first time in a while, having had some pretty dark times the last few months, feeling like he's just got that sort of game face back on, feeling good about his game again.
Yeah, definitely, because he's been putting the work in. You know, there was only so long the non-practicing was going to pay off for. You know, obviously paid off in spectacular fashion. But, yeah, he's been working hard again. He's been working on himself as well, been getting fit. So, yeah, and it's showing. He's looked much better in recent tournaments, the Welsh and then in Saudi. And, yeah, I fancy him to have a run here. The first big tournament he won in his career was China Championship. So he's got nice memories over that side of the world. He's never going to big anything too much in terms of really wanting something, because he's super chilled out, but he's going to want to turn up in Sheffield and put on a good defence of his world title, and we're getting close to it. So I expect him to come out firing. You'd expect him to win that first match that you mentioned there, and he's certainly a player that can get on a roll. So yeah, fancy him to do some stuff next week.
Monday lunchtime viewing here, and we'll feature some interesting matches. Let's first hit the earlier ones, actually. The early hours matches Monday, which is Sean Murphy, Zeus Sir, is the first one I've written down here. Repeat of a German Masters match in January, which Zeus Sir won 5-3. Break of 1-3-1. I was reminding myself, looking a little bit on YouTube, of that one. A cracking performance from him there. Judd Trump's got Rory Thor. Looking at Rory's season, had a couple of notable wins at the Scottish Open, knocked out by the eventual winner there, Gary Wilson, but John obviously an overwhelming favourite. Zhang Ander, who has to be one of the players of the season, he's got Alan Taylor. Zhang seems to be a live contender, doesn't he, for tournaments most weeks now. And then the lunchtime matches then, Kyron Wilson, David Grace. Haven't met for 7 years, Phil, since the match at the Crucible, but I have no recollection of whatsoever Kyron winning 10-6. I had a look at it. I thought, I don't remember that at all. Ricky Walden, Jamie Jones. That match kind of half leapt off the page at me. They played twice this season already, actually, at the European Masters and International Championship. Ricky's won them both with scorelines of 5-3 and 6-3, respectively. And there's always something a bit special about Ding Junhui in tournaments in China. He's got Zach Surtee. So, yeah, I saw a similar blank expression from you. Kyron Wilson, David Grace. I don't remember a single shot of that match or anything about it whatsoever.
It doesn't leap to mind now, does it? I'm sure it was some great stuff in there. but yeah, Ding. I mean, Zach Surtee is a player reborn this year. That is no gimme for Ding in the first round. But yes, some of the good stuff there. Mark Allen against Daniel Wells. Mark Allen's going to be a threat there. He's won this tournament a couple of times before, but in when it was in Haiku, I think that's where it was before. Jamie Jones, he's still sort of, he's been floating around the middle rankings for a bit now, but I just think of him as a very difficult player for anyone. So, him against Walden feels like it could be much deeper in the tournament. There's lots of intriguing games, because if we forget, it's easy to forget that we've had or nearly entirely around in January in Barnsley. So the bigger names will be closer together than usually at the start of a tournament, because they played at the Metrodome a while ago, much to Ronnie O'Sullivan's dismay. But yeah, no, plenty to look forward to. And nice, that half one start here is early, but half six start over a reasonable length match. That's nice to watch some snooker over your cornflakes.
Is that your cereal of choice, is it?
I actually never really eat breakfast, but if it, that was just a phrase.
Fair dues to you. Tuesday, Phil, let's talk about that now. Early morning viewing for us in the UK, but if you're in other parts of the world, it could be the evening, could be the afternoon. John Higgins, Jackson Page. Higgins won 4-3 when they met at the 2022 Northern Ireland Open. I always like seeing Jackson test himself against these sort of big hitters. I think it's all valuable for him. Zhao Yulong Wu Yiza is an interesting match as well. I thought will be worth a look at if you're up early in the UK or in other parts of the world watching at different times. Stephen Maguire, Pang Jung Soo as well in that session. Stephen doesn't seem like he's done much at all this season. Tuesday lunchtime matches, David Gilbert, Fang Zhengzhi. Well, Fang's reached three tournament quarterfinals this season, which is two more than Dave, actually. Dave's reached one, generally having a pretty humdrum season, Dave Gilbert. Ryan Day, Matthew Stevens, an all-Welsh clash, their first meeting at the Malta Cup in 2007, generally a close head-to-head over the years in that one, but not a close head-to-head Ronnie O'Sullivan, Michael White. Ronnie's won every one of their past meetings, so he will obviously be a warm favourite there. Nopon Sangkam against Cao Yu Peng is a match that is quite hard to call. There could be some top snooker there. That could well go all the way. Neil Robertson, Tiang Peng Fei. Well, they last played a decade ago, which seems funny. Tian winning 5-1 in that one at the German Masters, long time ago. This is the time you do feel for Neil now, who has shown signs, but he now wants to really step up, doesn't he, really, with Sheffield just around the corner. So, yeah, lots of big hitters. The ones that won't be in Manchester, or very likely not, but are still very good players, will really, really see this as an important week, Phil, you know, to sort of put their foot down. We won't see, you know, many of these guys again until Sheffield now. That's how much we're at the very, very busy end of the season. So some, you know, cracking action to look forward to. And yeah, I guess after this as well, it will be mostly long length snooker, won't it? So this is the first kind of, sorry, the last week-long multiplayer event of the season.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And, it's a big, as you say, it's crucial for these guys. You know, Robertson is one especially because you've got to stay in the top 16. He wants to, but I think he's going to have to win it. And, you know, Neil Robertson's so good, people are talking about that as if it's a possibility. And, of course, it is a possibility, but it would be a remarkable thing considering his results so far this season. I know he's picked up a bit, but to go and win this enormous event now would be some result. I think the way the draw sort of shaped up is interesting. There's one quarter, especially in my mind, that looks like a stinker. The second quarter has got Alan Selby, Zhang Ander, who John Higgins, who, you know, they'd be four of the top seven or eight. Is that half of the top eight favourites? Probably something like that. So, yeah, that is a very difficult quarter to pick from. And then that obviously means the other ones are somewhat more open, the likes of Ronnie and Neil and Judd to come through potentially. So, that does happen sometimes, doesn't it, where there's a few fancied names all in the same place, whereas not so much elsewhere. But, really looking forward to it. I won't be watching it all through the night, but as I say, that's that middle session and then the second one at sort of 11:30 our time. Superb.
Great stuff. So enjoy the World Open, everybody. Big tournament to come. And of course, just to get the old paper diary out here, just the next 6-7 weeks in the snooker, absolutely tantalising, compelling entertainment to come. This is the time of the year. We all sort of didn't feel very spring-like, mind you, here in the UK. Pretty cold and wet, but it's obviously getting that way dates-wise, and hot on the heel, off the heels of this, we'll have the World Mixed Doubles in Manchester, then the Tour Championship, and then, of course, all roads will lead to Sheffield. The big date there in terms of qualifying is April the 8th, that's underway, and then April the 20th, which will be the first of 17 days at the Crucible. So loads to look forward to, Phil. And maybe I think we're possibly at any other business stage. And just to say, I did say one more word, but I thought it's only right to report that we did have a difference in the poll on Saudi, that it was 67% felt uncomfortable with the event. We did the poll again, it was 52 after the tournament. So that did change. Important to note that. I wanted to do that on the pod. We said that, so that's important to say. People's, you know, they've had their minds changed a little bit on that one. But yeah, anything much more to say? Looking forward to the next big event. Of course, the Women's World Championship will be over by the time we next come on air. So lots of great action to come on that. And yeah, lots of other sport as well. Cheltenham ongoing, Phil. And it's been a bit of a wet old Cheltenham, but nevertheless, you know, doesn't bother us snooker people, does it, Phil? The weather, always inside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Plenty more action to watch. And as I said at the start, sort of, they're not major tournaments, they are hugely important. Lots of tour cards being won in the coming days. So we'll wrap all that up when we're back. I think I mentioned last time, sort of the prize money. I found that I was looking at the prize money at the women's, and it has gone up a bit. It's still, you know, obviously much lower than we would like it to be. And that's no criticism of the women's tour or anything like that. It's just the reality of it. $10,000 for the winner of the women's tournament, which is a step. It's more than last time. So we're going in the right direction. And as you mentioned, the setup there, superb. Everyone's doing a great job. So, you know, these guys probably deserve a bit more than that. But we are moving in the right way. So hopefully keep going in that right direction.
Shall we get off the air?
Let's do it. My cat is yowling at me from the other side of the door, so I better go and see what he wants.
Definitely. Definitely. Animal Magic with Johnny Morris comes to my mind, Phil. That's not the first time or the last time I mentioned it on here. That's another one for the teenagers. Great to see you. I salute you. Thanks for your company. See you next time. Enjoy all the action to come in China, and we'll gather again next time to talk all about it.
We will. Always a pleasure. And thanks everyone for listening. Much appreciated. And getting in contact in such big numbers and comprehensive messages. Also very much appreciated.
Yeah, we've got some other correspondence as well away from Saudi, which we'll catch up on as well. Some good stuff. Our friend Gary Moss messaging us about tickets and a few other people about the tournaments they've been to. So we'll catch up on that soon. Keep it coming. For now, thank you very much indeed for your company and from your old friends, Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.